Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Creatives Chat. I'm Rusty.
I'm Peter.
And Peter, tell everyone who we have on our show this week.
Ooh, Rusty, we have a rock fusion band from Seattle. They're already genre jumping masters. They're known for being a band that makes music for the people who listen to everything. They take funk, R&B, rock, blues, rap, indie, just to name a few, and shape it into one refined sound. They just debuted their sophomore album, Start Acting Strange. Today, we're interviewing In Aisle 8.
Streaming from Retro Earth Studio and brought to you by
WeAreHistorically.com, Conscious Human Apparel, and
Learn to Play Jazz Piano Like a Pro by a Pro with Jazz Piano Pro Essentials at jazzpianopro.com.
Let's meet In Aisle 8.
So yeah, the show's a really organic show. It's just pure conversation, like whatever comes up. No need to feel like you can't interrupt or just cut in or just, you know, go off on tangents. It's like we're just kicking it in the back porch, summertime, chilling.
Nice.
So it's the casual vibes. And really, just get right into it. So what does it feel like creating an amazing, honestly, like it's fire, sophomore debut album? It's like, it's legit, guys. I love it.
Oh, thank you so much. Jeez,
thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
It feels really good. It's so, a lot of work has gone into getting things to sound the way they do now. We've tried for years to get things to sound to that like top-notch studio quality level, and we failed many times. So this is just a product of lots of failures and kind of learning how to make things sound as good as they possibly can.
Yeah, really, it's kind of a culmination of, you know, mistakes we've made in the past. Now, I wouldn't say mistakes so much as you know, learning things that you've done, and then you've been, well, if I could do it again,
trial and error.
Yeah, if I could do it again, I'd do it differently. And this time we did it differently. I think it paid off. Something we're all very proud of. Spent a lot of time on, probably more time than we spent on any of our other previous projects. We started this album.
Definitely.
Started making this album in 2019.
Yeah.
2019.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I think the one thing that really stands out too is that, you know, you're talking about this process of growth and kind of continual development. And it really does kind of echo in throughout the entire album, like this whole purpose of looking within, finding a deeper meaning. And I mean, obviously, like how you respond to life in the different situations. So, I mean, like, just to see the parallels in the experience, it's really cool to see it play out in the sound. I love that.
Appreciate it again, man. Thanks, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So who's working on most of those lyrics anyway?
That's me.
There you go. There you go. Such a diverse sound. I mean, I think that's the thing that stands out is, like, you guys are all so talented and cover such a wide, like, you are the definition of, like, genre jumping, where each song embodies its own kind of like nostalgic sound. I mean, like for me, it was like the 90s all the way to the 2000s. Crush It could be back then. It had that timelessness nature to it. So I was like, yo, you spanned like 3-4 decades. I see you. Like,
thank you.
Thank you. I think that has to do with all of us have such a wide array of musical taste. Whereas if we were to all listen to the same kind of music strictly, the music we would make would not have that same contrast from song to song. But since each song kind of has a different songwriting process from person to person, that's where you get that kind of genre jumping element.
Love it. Well, and that's the thing, it's cohesive though, where it just sounds right. And that's this thing where it's like, you have zero type of critique. You're like, no, I feel it. It was balanced. I loved it.
Yeah, thank you.
So who is doing most of like the kind of like that back end production of really like fine tuning each type of like beat? Cause who was it that was really focused on the synths and don't? Cause that was fire, like all throughout that song.
That was a combination of Evan and I just working in. Yeah, that song was interesting cause we, that song is also the most recent song that we made. We started working on that like a year ago, almost exactly. And Evan and I had gone to the studio to work on making beats to send out to this other Seattle artist who went by the name Mr. DC at the time. And yeah, that was just the product of that. We were trying to make something that that they could potentially work off of. And, you know, the further we got into the process, we were like, oh, we want to keep this for us. And yeah, it started like with guitar and drums, and then Evan and I just started layering a bunch of different synth ideas.
I think it's important to note that that album was supposed to be released before that song was even created, but mm-hmm. because of the pandemic, we delayed the album release. So that was like a last minute addition post pandemic. Yeah, it was so good that we just decided to add it on there.
It's right in though. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it kind of balanced it out because they're like towards the end of the album, there starts to be like less rappy, less poppy stuff. So we just threw it right back in there and just made it balance a little more.
Well, that's the thing right there is that the whole album had such a nice pace. It's like from the start, you're like, already, it's over. What the hell? You time skipped a little bit because it's just every one of them just hits, but they're all so unique in that sound. So who's really the front man in that creative process? Or is it really just that balancing act of each inspiration from each one of you?
I feel like it's, so the way we do things, it's kind of different. We don't usually get together and make our songs. It's usually like Hayden will have an idea that he records a demo for, and then we all come and expand it, or like I'll make a beat and then we like Tristan will throw lyrics on it, and then we'll start throwing live instrumentation, and then we just take the best of all of that, and we really hone in. And we kind of had like a vision for what songs were going to go on this album when we had like 20 plus songs, and then we had to narrow it down. So yeah, I just think it's everybody.
The beats too. Like yeah. we had 20 plus songs beats not written, and we were like, all right, which one of these are gonna fit together once the lyrics are there to be the album?
Yeah.
So I had like a specific set of songs to write to.
We got a good mix of everybody on this album though. I think it's a really healthy combo of everybody's style.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really nice. It just happened to work out that way.
Yeah.
Very cool. And one quick addition to my previous comment, because I know I'll catch some flack if I don't mention it. Jason absolutely did some synths on yeah. Don't.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah, there's.
I wasn't gonna say anything, but
I knew. I was like, I'm definitely gonna hear about this later.
I did all the synths. I did a decent amount. I'm not gonna lie to you, Peter.
Good job. Yeah, I remember from the first demo of that song, and then to like what eventually became the more final product, that they added that it was Jason and Evan with Jason handling synths for the section, that like operatic section with them like, I heard that and I lost it. I was like, oh my god, I personally never thought that the song would go in that direction and get so like just dramatic and like bump them like that. And owe it all to Jason for that.
Love it for the record well, I think that's the thing right there is just as the testament to the sound and the backgrounds, and the beat is so dynamic and is just going in this wave throughout the entire album. Each song kind of has its own phase in terms of writing to that. Like, I just gotta give it to Tristan on that one, because it's just like fire, yo, the entire album. And quite the voice can sing.
That, I feel like that's improved since the first album for sure, which I'm proud of.
There you go.
The crazy thing with Tristan is that we give him all these different types of songs, right?
Yeah.
And you could write like a pop punk song, you could write a rap song, and a like an aggressive rock song. Like,
yeah,
these aren't easy tasks, but he somehow pulls it off every time.
Well, and lyrically, the transitions too, like to and from when it does do the genre jump. What's going on in that mind of yours, Tristan? Like the in the writing creative process, what's been a lot of the inspiration for this album?
I think I really like just listen to, you never really hear the songs without the music and the instrumental first. So for me, like, I'll just listen to the instrumental over and over again. And like, usually I can tell like right off the bat what kind of vibe it is, like what I'm feeling. I'll have like I'll make like basically like a really rough outline in my head of like every part and the melodies, and I just kind of have to like fit the lyrics into that, and I can just kind of like draw from the vibe what the lyric is going to be. And it's not easy. It definitely takes a while. It's not always very fast either. But sometimes it is, you know, sometimes like it just pops in there. It's usually easier for me to write from like an outside perspective too. Mm-hmm. Like with like tell or something, like that's just like a story. Like that's a different thing for me. And it's like, it's easier for me to write like features and stuff like that than it is for me to write like my own voice in a song, if that makes sense. Which I think is why I like writing so many different kind of genres.
I love it. And it really does. I mean, again, that's just the dynamic aspect that really caught my eye about you guys, is you really do encompass so many different sounds and qualities and just the energies. And when I say like the nostalgic feeling, it's almost like, yeah, I could see that in like a movie. Like I can hear that and see that, you know, in something that could be just blasted like globally, because it has that. It's not just like the catchy, but it's just the mellow. I don't know. It's so weird to express it. Like you can tell that you guys were in the zone when you were making it. Like, you know, just like you captured that just effortless now. So what's the next step in terms of really pushing the album and, I mean, getting out there and spreading this sound?
Yeah. Well, so shows are coming back finally. So that's, that's great. The reason we delayed the album in the first place is because we didn't want to put it out and then, you know, never not played a show for a year. We had an entire tour scheduled, our first tour down to San Diego and back up, a little West Coast tour to promote the album. And then I think we all know what happened in March or February, whatever it was. It's kind of a blur. But so now it's just kind of like things are looking a little bit more promising than they were in 2020, which is nice. We have two music videos out, one for Arcade and one for Start Acting Strange, and then some other ones in the works as well.
We have merch now for it, for the album.
There we go.
Yeah, we've been just trying to think of unique ways to get it out there. It's really hard at the local level, and what we're finding is, you know, because we've been running some like ad campaigns, which credit to Ariel, he's kind of our marketing guru at this point, just to see like what other countries like us, and what was our biggest country besides the U.S.
Mexico.
There you go.
Which I personally, I'm not shocked because I'm Mexican, like my family's from Mexico, and all of my, like everybody down there, all of my family, like they're huge into music from like all over the place. And a lot of my favorite bands, their biggest audiences outside of the US are all in Latin America, which is interesting. You'll find that like with a lot of rock bands in general, especially like from the 90s and early 2000s, like Mexico freaking loves them. Argentina has like a massive music scene, and Brazil as well. And yeah, I personally would love to, if we start building up like a very legitimate following in these places, I would love to go play shows there personally. And that's the goal, is to build up audiences in other countries and eventually have a big enough fan base in those areas to eventually go play there.
Yeah, that's the move. That's awesome. Well, that's the thing about cultures and the influences of the, you know, just like the musical ear and what you're really attracted to. So I'm curious, like, what are your guys' backgrounds musically? Because you guys do, again, like, you encompass so many different sounds. I'm very like, where did it start?
Yeah, should we, like, go around?
Go around? Okay, yeah, so, because everyone has a very different story. Yeah. But most of us at least kind of grew up in the same area and like grew up in the same kind of environment. Not much happening in Silver Firs, Washington, musically, I will say. But I came from a musical family. My dad's been in bands since I was born. So I kind of just picked up the drums, realized I had like a rhythm for it. And then over the years started working with like rap artists, R&B artists, pop singers, and things like that to really kind of just get all my ideas out there and really get into that production space as well. And that kind of shows on the album with songs like Arcade, Merlot, and Don't, the more produced ones, with more of like the you know, not the live drums, MIDI instruments and things like that. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I'm like a big like rock and rap fan. So my that's my imprint on the band, but everyone else has very different stories.
So I'm a guitarist, so I feel like I look more towards individuals rather than like full-on artists or genres. I kind of grew up listening to a lot of classic rock, which was just an era where every band had a legendary guitarist. So like kind of biggest one for me would be Terry Kath, the original guitarist of Chicago. And I think his, I like to take a lot of solos, especially if you see us live, I hope you like guitar solos.
For real.
I take a lot of inspiration from him, but again, it's just, it's really it's a big culmination. A big one specifically, I think, would be Ween, which is a band is that's, I think the definition of genre jumping, which I think is why, is a big reason why, you know, demos I make to bring to the band are different every time.
I love it. There you go. And was that you on Shapeshifter?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, because that's like classic rock. I was like, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank I feel you. That.
Well, that solo's crazy.
Thank you.
Right.
As far as me, yeah, I grew up with a family that was very into music. My dad was a singer. My grandpa played in a band in the military, so he's like the guitar player and the singer. And so I was raised around music, and I just immediately loved it. I was 3 years old when I went to my first concert. I was Tom Petty, and I love Tom Petty. Still do. And just kind of, yeah, just grew up singing a whole lot. Kind of fell out of the singing and got on the guitar around like fifth grade. Played a lot of guitar there, fell out of that kind of entirely. And then around like 10th grade. So, well, when I was like growing up, I didn't like rap. I was really into like the rock and stuff like that. Did not like rap. And then around 9th grade, started liking rap and then started trying rap. And then in 10th grade, just became a rapper. And like that was my thing in high school, is I was just a rapper. Which is I think why these guys wanted to do anything with me. I was doing jam sessions with them, and I was like playing guitar and stuff like that, but like they wanted me to rap their stuff. So we made a little band for like a high school talent show, and I wrote the rap, and we did all the instrumentals and stuff. And that's kind of really where it all started as far as like us working together.
Yeah.
And then like, yeah, so we were doing like the rock rap thing. And then I was like singing in the car on the way to work all the time. And I was like starting to get my voice back. Like, I feel like puberty kind of like took it away from me. And then I was like, all right, I think I can actually kind of sing again. And so, yeah, we started, that's when Annihilate became a thing, is because of like the singing and like the genres kind of changed. And, like immediately off the first album, we had different stuff that had me sing as well as rap. Yeah. And then once we got Ariel and Hayden, we had two guitars, and that's a lot of guitars for live stuff. So then eventually I started playing piano, and then I sing and play piano.
He's a great pianist.
Thank you.
That's so sick.
I guess I'm next.
The man himself. Yeah.
I grew up playing in a jazz band, actually. So I've been doing jazz in middle high school and a little bit in college. So I have a little bit of a different background. So I did that in like orchestra and stuff. But I also really liked a lot of like the classic rock and the oldies stuff. And I think that really has shaped my little bit of a different style I bring into the group, which is cool. That also means we have a upright bass as well as an electric bass to work with, which is really neat. But that's, I think, just really got me into a lot of different genres. And I really, really like the Violent Femmes. Their bass player is really cool. I think I've taken so much inspiration from Brian Ritchie. That dude's a beast, a shredder. But it's kind of fun. It's to take a lot of that classical or that jazz stuff and actually like move it into rock, which I know a lot of other very famous musicians do too. But I think just some technique stuff I've learned has really like brought me into the scene and kind of found what I like about rock stuff, what I like about jazz stuff. It was getting to my own little unique style that I have, which is super neat.
What was one of the dopest bass lines to work on for this album for you?
That just on like this album, I mean, I really liked
I really like what I ended up with this first Star Act and Strange Brew title track. There's just a couple of lines I do on there that I just was really happy about. There's some cool, a little bit more melodic stuff on Tell that kind of came towards the end. And I really like, it's kind of mixed in with the guitars, but I'm doing a pretty cool riff on Shapeshifter as well behind all the verses, which I was really proud of. I think we ended up doubling that, right? We were doing,
we did.
Yeah, so we're doing like a low bit, and then I was doing something higher up with a pick to give it some more girth, which was really cool.
Yeah,
kind of like Mark Hoppus Blink 182 style, which I also grew up listening to a lot of the pop and ska punk stuff too. I can't believe I didn't say that first. So, but the bass work and all those songs are just, they are nuts. They're always just going all over the fingerboard. So I think I do take a bit of that too. But yeah, so those, yeah, probably just Arctic and Stranger Shapeshifter, I think two of the ones I'm the most proud of on this album at least, but really fun to work on. It's Evan and I have a really, really good amount of chemistry, like with what we can do together rhythmically. It's a lot of, I mean, Evan knows all my bass parts in the back of his head.
I know what he's going to do before he does it, and vice versa. And that's a big chemistry to have.
My man in the studio.
Yeah, that, that rhythm section on point.
Exactly.
It's important. Yeah, a lot of folks don't really think about that first, but it's a really cool thing to have, especially that great chemistry. It's really nice.
That's sick, yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose it's my turn. For me, nobody in my like direct like immediate family was particularly musical at all. Like my sister was always a dancer, my mom did dance when she was younger and all that. But it was actually my cousin, Kevin, who I have to give like massive credit to, because he was the one who first taught me how to play guitar at all when I was like 7 years old. And that just like changed everything for me. I'd always been extremely interested in music. My parents like listened to a bunch of music growing up. My dad is a massive music fan. You know, classic rock, psych rock, a lot of new wave, and a lot of Latin music, like from all over the world. Well, all over Latin America, I suppose for that. But yeah, and then so when I got into guitar, I got really into like grunge and whatnot off the bat. But yeah, like it wasn't later on down the road until I was like 13 that I became absolutely obsessed with Pearl Jam. And everybody here knows like that's creme de la crème for me. Like that's my absolute favorite. And that has influenced like a bunch of my guitar stuff. But yeah, just growing up, being surrounded by other musician friends, because in Silver Firs where we grew up, I started playing with two of my close friends, who Jason and I are now in another band with called The Furs. We started playing music together, and then, yeah, their names were Ty and Sam. And I started playing music with them when I was like 10 years old. And then so it was just a whole lot of them exposing me to a bunch of music, specifically rap, because at that point I didn't listen to a bunch of rap, and they got me really into rap from that age. And lots of rock from all over the ages. But yeah, in terms of other musical stuff and experiences, I was in like concert band all throughout middle school and high school, playing alto sax, which I haven't played in years at this point, but I would love to pick back up.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I love that instrument. It'd be sweet to pull out a sax solo every now and then. But yeah, and I've also sang my whole life, and that's been like another thing with this band where I'll do backing vocals. I have the occasional lead vocal. Like on this album, I sing Boyer, and at the beginning of Don't, I sing that first verse. And just everything. Like I was in choirs and whatnot all throughout elementary school. And
there you go.
Been a whole lot of that, lots of music.
That's so legit, you guys. That changes actually the way I can interpret the album. I gotta listen back through again, I guess. That's one of those things where it's like the dynamic aspects of how much you guys actually put into each song. I mean, that's one of those things too, where it really isn't, it is a cohesive group effort. And that's really interesting in terms of the, you know, we talk about the pandemic and kind of like throwing off the timeline of everything. Did that add to the favor in terms of you could just marinate in this creative process more and really just like fine tune like this to a T?
So this is a fun fact. I don't think anyone knows this outside of us, but we finished, like, put a pin in the album. It was done like a couple months before the pandemic, maybe 2 months. So we didn't really add anything onto it besides revising some of like the ending, like mixing and mastering stuff. Mm. We just had it locked in, and we kind of all stopped listening to it for like the pandemic, which made it really fun when it came out, because we're like, oh my gosh, like listening back, hearing these things. And the only thing we added was Don't, which I'm very happy we did, because that song is like my baby of a song. But that's the only thing we added. Other than that, we put a rap in everything beforehand. I would have, if we kept working on it throughout the pandemic, it probably still wouldn't have been out, to be honest. Because we probably, you know, we would have taken our time, and, you know, you can always fix something. So I think it's very important to just know when a song is done, or a project is done, for that matter.
Yeah, putting too much time, and eventually,
yeah, and then you just ruin everything that you do. So
it takes it too much.
It's a moment in time. It represents a nice moment in time for us, and yeah, I wouldn't change anything about it at this point.
I love that. It's the, well, I guess that does put the different perspective on it when you stand back, pretty much almost like a year later to the release, and being like, "We made that. Yeah, we made that."
Exactly.
So I guess, Evan, you're just the hip hop head who got everyone into rap. Is that just how this like story goes with the group? Or
no, it's not. well, I would say Tristan and I probably have the most hip hop influence.
Facts.
I kind of grew up not really liking rap that much either. Me and Tristan pretty much got into it at the same time.
Love it.
Back before any kind of Annihilate stuff, I produced an album with Tristan. Called The Show About Time. It's like 20, it's a ridiculous runtime. It's like 25 songs or something like that. And you know, it was when we both didn't really know what we were doing, but we're still proud of that to this day. And I work with a lot of rap artists nowadays. So I know that, like, well, rap is like the most popular genre, right? And I love incorporating it into the songs that we make, because we give it a much different feel, I think.
Yeah.
But as far as like hip hop head, definitely, I mean, not really, but I would say that, yeah, my influence definitely lies with rap music as of right now. And same with Tristan.
Mm. And that's right there too, where, you know, in terms of the lyricism, it's very fascinating when I find someone who could make very introspective, like, and at times, you know, on the darker side of lyrics, in terms of like when you conceptualize and really try to like look into like the words behind the meaning of it, and it's still so upbeat and just gets you moving, that like it blows my mind sometimes, man. So kudos to that.
There's a lot of songs like that, just like, I mean, outside of our band, like if you look at a lot of upbeat poppy songs with dark lyrics, it's just, it's kind of a niche, I guess, like it's a thing out there to do. So yeah, I don't know how like intentional it is. I don't know if like anybody listens to a happy song and like, oh, I'm gonna make this so sad. But like, it just happens sometimes, like when you think it, I don't know how it happens, but it happens. Yeah,
I love it. it's gonna be the most depressing song yet. You're gonna just keep humming it.
The thing is, so the subject matter of the song Don't is extremely depressing. But that is probably the most upbeat, like maybe second most danceable song on the album. So I think there's something to it. I think putting like the pain into the song and then flipping it to be something that someone can sing along to and not even really understand the true meaning behind the lyrics, but just like enjoy the melody or the beat to it. I think there's some power to that.
That's fun too, to like discover, oh, this song I've been like happily sing along to is actually really sad. It's a whole new respect for music. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Well, and that's the kind of timeless nature that you guys really did capture, and I think that's the coolest thing, is to even have like 98% of the album done, and then to even incorporate the other song and have that be still the same, just effortlessness that just comes through when you're really vibing in that project. Just again, it captured this moment, so you can just, as I said earlier, like 4 decades, like it spans, like I could have heard this in the 90s and I would have loved it. I could have heard it in early 2000s, like obviously like late 2020s, you know, but you really do cover so many different moments. I don't know. It's hard to express. And I think that's kind of the cool thing that you guys captured in terms of just like the creative process and expressing and just human expression itself. So I really want to know about the lyrics and in terms of the development and putting them on alignment in the album, like who was ordering it? Where did the flow come from? Who was really kind of like leading the front on that end?
So, because as far as like, ordering the
arrangement, the arrangement of it. Because again, it's just like you guys, once it hit, you had this pace that just kind of kept pushing through the entire album. And it was, I don't know, it's like, it's hard to express. Like, you guys really did make such like a dynamic work. It truly is the work of art. It's dope. Like, listen to it. If you're watching this and you haven't listened to it yet, like, you need to listen to it. Check out the description. We'll have it.
Right, please. Thank you. As far as the order, we spent a lot of time. So we recorded our vocals and did all of our mixing and mastering at Send It Records with Evan Kessler, which I'm sure we'll probably dive deep into him later. He's a very talented man. But it was changing the entire time we were mixing and recording. We had a whiteboard with, you know, all at that time, 11 songs. And then just kind of changing the order, having several different options as we go. And we ended up kind of almost with like this U shape. So the album starts and, you know, right away energy is pretty high. And then someone dips, not to, you know, not to anywhere where to lose attention, but you don't want to jump from, you know, the heaviest song on the album to the like slowest, quietest song on the album. Because even though we're jumping genres and everything, we still, it's an album, right? It's not like a, it's not a playlist. You don't, that's, I think, the biggest thing that you need to avoid when you make all these different types of songs. So I think it was a big, to answer your question, it was all of us, I think, but over the course of months.
Yeah. it took a while to get that track listened to. And I know for a fact that there were, you know, not arguments, but at least, you know, heavy discussions about, you know, certain songs flipping places or whatever.
I think we're all very happy with it. Oh yeah, I wouldn't change it now.
No, yeah, I wouldn't
change it. It was a process, that's for sure.
So, in terms of just the experience and the even just from like the title to the videos that are out right now, where did the Start Acting Strange come from?
The lyrics in Start Acting Strange,
like well, that's, just that's, in terms of. Just in terms of just like the album, like naming the album that, and
it just set. I remember we were sitting in a really sticky restaurant called La Voyeur, which is also a song on the album.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it because Start Acting Strange. The song was called Start Acting Strange, and we were just like going over like what could this potentially be called. The first album was just called Annihilate. The second EP was called No Good, and so there was a song called No Good. So we were just looking at the song titles, potential lyrics. I bet I could think of some other ones that we had on the
table.
Eighth degree. That was one too. We just thought starting strange just sounds like a statement, and it's like a statement that doesn't get said just as like start acting strange. You know, like you could say like this person started acting strange, or like
it's a call to action.
He's been acting strange, but as a call to action, it just sounds cool. And we'd never really seen it done. Like we looked it up and nobody had named anything that, and like that's also important, is having something that's unique and that's not been already out there.
I
will say a quick note on that. I recently moved out of an apartment that I lived in for a while, and I found the list of names working titles for the album. I have it's on
That's good. What are some of them?
There was Toy, I know, was on there.
Toy. That would have been a cool album there.
It's a dope song, though, too.
What's What was on that on that list.
I wasn't with What's What.
I know I wasn't. But,
I don't even remember where that idea came from.
It was my idea. I remember I was just thinking, that was just from my brain, it was a reference to the genre jumping on the album. But I think Start Acting Strange is not only representative of that as a whole, but also just sounds way cool. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah, I love how the alliteration, you know, start strange. It's great. I'm really stoked that we ended up naming it that, and it looks great on a logo.
He's got the merch. Right? Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, I feel like if you know nothing about our band and you see that shirt, it's still kind of cool. Oh yeah, check it out. There we go.
I love it.
Album. Start
acting. Yes.
What I can tell so far, it seems to be memorable enough because nobody has like messed up the title. Like if they were like, yeah, what's that new album you got? It's like Start Acting Strange, right? Something like that. Like I haven't heard somebody saying like Start Being Weird is I haven't seen it. Like it just seems like it sticks in people's heads when they see it.
Helps the lyrics of the song are catchy too. Mm-hmm. Really just helps stick it in.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the thing is that you guys really did create something that's like, yo, this is going to be something that you can listen to for a long time. And it's like, oh, I heard a new thing. Oh, whoa. I didn't even, cause again, like I'm going to have to listen to this again. And I'm probably going to discover even more things. I would have more questions. So, but in terms of even just the development of, you know, incorporating different features, you know, I know you guys work with some horn players on this too. How was this whole experience of just even like the development of the album? Like, cause I know you guys mentioned earlier that you don't usually work in like the same space all the time. At what point was there anyone all together when you guys were working on this album, or was it entirely pieced and kind of like solo elaborated on?
I don't think that there was any day that every single person, at least when we were finishing up the album and doing vocals and mixing, I don't think there was a single day where everybody was there at one time. But like in terms of recording the like demos and instruments, a lot of them it was like, you know, these guys starting out ideas and whatnot on their laptops, and then us getting together, maybe two or three of us at a time to record at our studio or at somebody's house, and just starting to lay down tracks one at a time.
I think it's important to note that you were in Bellingham and he was also not at their apartment yet. So, true. Well, for some of it, at least. Mm-hmm. You pretty much all the whole album were in Bellingham.
Yeah. I'll comment on that real quick. At the same time that we were doing like all the heavy recording for this album, Jason and I were working on a whole nother album for our other band. So it was like a lot of trips back and forth for me and for Jason, back and forth from Bellingham to this area. To just, you know, trade places on what project we were working on.
Deep, deep adventuring.
But all five of us, because we definitely, you know, we get together for band practices and whatnot. So a lot of like the, you know, talking about the album is a big part of, you know, actively working on it too. And really setting headlines too, which is something that we did all together. But as far as actively working on it. Yeah, I didn't even think about that until now, but yeah, all five of us, I don't think we're ever in the same room actively working on the album altogether.
That's so wild. That's even crazy. That's even crazier though, where it's like, you know, it does sound just so, it's hard to conceptualize and to put into words, because I swear like each song has like at least like four jumps, different genres, it all flows. So it's like you really are listening to just this epic, just masterpiece of just like the nostalgic sounds. Like I just don't think you guys recognize, or just like, yo, like what Tristan was saying earlier, like no one's gonna mess the name up, dude, because everyone's vibing to it. Like you could play it on repeat, you could just bump it. Like
can we use that on our website as a quote? An epic masterpiece of nostalgic sounds. That right there. Ooh, that's a good one. Awesome. Thank you. But hey, our
put that on a shirt.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Our slogan that we use is we make music for people that listen to a little bit of everything. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
And that connects with a lot of people. I've gotten a lot of people that have checked us out just because they've seen that as our slogan and they're like, I need to hear what they're talking about. And I think we execute it well, because it could sound like a jumbled mess if you don't do it right, but we put a lot of time into making sure that it was executed well. And at this point, a lot of people have been like, what's your sound? Or like, you know, what's a band that you sound like? Or like, what kind of music do you make? It should be such a straightforward answer. It is the hardest question. It's like, well, it's a little bit of this and this. So at this point, we can just say we make music for people that listen to everything. Go check it out.
Yeah.
You want to say just listen to it, but it's like you want to give them something to, for a reason to listen to it.
Yeah.
For
long,
so. Yeah.
But now well,
I can.
Which is great.
Well, I think that's the thing too, where, you know, making an imprint on someone and, you know, capturing those moments. To me, it was like, the way I verbalized it, I think I like it the best, at least, out of the things I came up with, was I could have listened to that on, like, Tony Hawk 2, like, growing up.
That's a huge compliment.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's probably, like, narrows it down to, like, the true, like, yeah, that's what I'm vibing with, yo.
That's
or just like a song on every different radio station in GTA.
Yeah. Right.
There you go.
Got one for every one of them though. That's the thing.
For me, video game music is actually a huge like inspiration as far as like as a kid. Oh, I would like just like Sonic soundtracks. They're really eclectic and just like they'll have like a rap stage and then like a pop punk stage. And for me that was probably huge in shaping how like my sound, I guess. I still like think about guitar solos and stuff like that is like would this be in a Sonic game or, and that's and I also look at it like from movies like how you're saying like the nostalgia of it seems like it would be in a movie like I kind of think about it like that too like when I'm listening to instrumentals
so this is a question we're taking this way because I'm just super curious so when you're writing the lyrics and you're you know you're listening to the music and you're creating the song in that sense for your own self are you visualizing like what you're talking about like that movie aspect like is there like these certain images that come up for you or are you just like painting a scene in your head while you're writing in the flow
I think the instrumental does that more for me like the instrumental paints the scene
yeah
and then I guess I just kind of fill the gaps like I know what the structure is supposed to be and then I just kind of have to fill it in that makes sense
yeah make it fit but uplift it transforms it though because like I think that's one of the things like Merlot could have gone a whole bit like bunch of different ways and just to have like that's one of those ones that to me probably if you were to like pair it with some like epic scene in a movie where it's like that summertime like pool party or something like that where it's like yeah that song could have come up and you would have
funny story about Merlot too Evan like it was a beat first and Evan wanted it, he was like gonna give it to somebody else. And he gave me like a deadline of like 2 weeks or something. It was like a week or 2 weeks. And he was like, yeah, I really want this person to do it, but if you can make something in this week or something, then maybe we could use it. So I'm like, all right. And yeah, just kind of pumped that out real quick. And it worked. That was one of my favorite songs probably.
Yeah. That was a wild. Some of my favorite like lyricism on the album is in that song as well.
Same. For sure.
Well, I guess that's the next question for that avenue of exploration is where's the inspiration for that come from?
Which one?
For Merlot.
Like just the lyrics in general?
Yeah. Like, I'm curious.
That beat name, man.
Well, the beat name, yes. For as far as the chorus, and then I kind of like turned it like because like a couple of the songs on the album, I was like drawing pictures. Like I was listening to the beat and I was drawing pictures to figure out what the thing was. Like Start Acting Strange came from me drawing a picture of some dude like looking up at a star and trying to catch it. And then somehow that turned into the song. I was like chasing stars probably to my backyard. That's I can show you a picture at some point. But so I was doing the same thing with Merlot and I was like drawing like drops of Merlot. So I drew a cloud and it had and I was drawing the raindrops coming out of it and I was like, rains Merlot is a place that rains Merlot and then that I guess turns into like what does Merlot do it stains things so I don't it's just kind of all there's the Rumpelstiltskin reference in there it just goes kind of all over the place as far as like the inspiration for it I think my brain just kind of goes that way though it's just like associate like it, we're kind of I kind of work in associations like Merlot turned into stains put that together raining Merlot the place that rains Merlot and then it just kind of all puts together like that just
evolves in the flow well the picture aspect blows my mind that's a curious one that's like just like the inspiration that's, where it's like once it's done you're just like download like this is it
Yeah, that's not a super common thing for me either. There's only a couple songs in the album, but I think it was just Merlot and Shark and Strange. Like, I tried to do that method later too, and I'm like, yeah, this is my new thing now. It has not been the same since. So those songs were special in that aspect, that the picture kind of helped with the creation.
Those are the most cinematic ones to me, though. Start Acting Strange.
Yeah.
To me, it was probably the most, I will say. And then, like, Merlot, like, right after that. Like, in terms of just, like, I could see something, like, while it's being played. And that's some, like, deep woo-woo stuff where I'm like, yo, what did he just do? Did he just, like, put a spell on people or some shit? Like, what was that, yo?
I think the lyrics to Star Acting Strange are my favorite. They're just kind of weird. And I like that. Mm-hmm.
Is that just like the ordered chaos of the mind, just like expressing in the now? Just like, yeah, this is everything that's jumping around in there.
I had a lot of fun writing that one.
Well, what's fun for you guys in the sense of the creative process? You know, I know that's one of the things to, especially from producing the album to performing things, you know, actually being able to capture that kind of like energy in the moment of just really being in the flow with each other and vibing off each other versus like doing things solo. Have you noticed a difference from performing them live to the production end, practicing?
Yeah, I'm someone that loves and lives for the production of music. I love playing live shows. There's nothing like it, but I think that the most satisfying feeling in music is putting in all that work to like get the final take that's the final piece of the puzzle to a song. And it's a grueling process and it's a long process, but production wise, I'm a very behind the scenes type of guy. So I love that aspect of it, but I know for everyone else, it's different. You know, I fell in love with the mixing and engineering side of things, but most of these guys are like true, like musicians that need to be performing live. So I'm guessing it's different for you.
I mean, I would say you are a great drummer and like, you do have that ear. Whether you like, even just because it's not on a guitar, like you still have that, you're still a true musician. But
yeah, that's true.
The most exciting thing for me is when we make a demo, whether it's something that I make on my own, whether it's something I start and then everybody else, we kind of work together to finish it, Tristan included. And then when you finally hear the lyrics on it afterwards, and it's like you're just, it's like when you're making a puzzle and the last piece is one that's in the middle. And you just put it right in there and it fits perfectly. And then you can step back and look at what you've done. And it feels great. And it's like, dang, that's it. And now it's like, not saying that instrumentals are not a song. Like we make our demos with space for lyrics still. Once those lyrics, the vocals are on there, it's like, there it is. Yeah. And like the song is now like created. I don't know. Yeah. Exciting.
It's a great way of putting it. The middle puzzle piece.
Some Thanos shit. Just like, epicness.
I just really like being able to take like some little thing, even if it's just a couple measures long, and just send it out knowing that it's going to turn into something way bigger than I could ever make it individually. It's just all the different creative minds. I just think that's so cool. And especially to find like the old versions of the demos later and see like, wow, that's what this started as. And like to see what it actually like morphs into. I think that's just the coolest thing. And it's extremely satisfying to hear it in the long run when it's finished. So.
Yeah, I'd like to echo that. I frequently like the files folder on my phone is just, and on my computer, it's just like full of old demos, even like old stuff from previous projects and whatnot. I'm like a super nostalgic person in general. So I love just seeing the growth of anything is probably the most gratifying and fulfilling part of the process for me. So normally it's closer to the end of a song's completion that really sets in.
I love it. That's another interesting thing about you guys is just the appreciation for the crap and the art that it is. And it almost turns in again, like when you talk about like the twisted game of telephone, how it just kind of evolves into this like, and morphs musically into this like epic, like, again, like just dope piece and dope track. You think about what was the one that really started off in just like such a different angle in terms of like a short little like 4-bar, 8-bar into like what you guys produce as like the final track. Was there one that really stood out where you're like, didn't think that one was going that way?
I have one personally. I think maybe we could all echo it.
Yeah, what you got?
Why? Anyone?
No, I think that one's I love Fly. I love the heck out of Fly. But I feel like as far as like the turns, that one's really consistent as far as like the genre. Mm. To me, it'd be Toy. I think Toy takes a pretty big turn.
Toy started. I mean, at least how I interpret the question, like where it starts and then what the final product ends up being. But Toy started as was me making something that was supposed to just be kind of creepy. And I think, I don't even remember if I was going to, I was intending on using it for Annihilate or anything, no plan with it. And I showed it to Evan. It was supposed to be kind of like creepy, kind of slow, and like a gradual build the whole time. Like the band Godspeed You Black Emperor. It was kind of what that was based off of. And they, I don't know, when I showed it to Evan, he added that one drum groove that you hear in the beginning of the song, and it was game over from that. And then it just completely changed whatever idea I had. I'm like, okay, we're going with that.
Yeah, I mean, so to my defense with this Fly thing, though, think about it. For like a year, we just heard Tristan's piano line, nothing else.
Yeah, I guess that's
true. And then it turned into what it did, and like the turn that it took, like for that 5 minutes where it just builds up, and then that beautiful ending. Like I would have never expected that song to go in that direction.
It's different for me because that's how it was in my head, like the whole time. Like when I was playing it over and over again, it's because I knew that's what I wanted it to be, basically. So like, yeah. I'm glad that it finally like became something. We got to make it what it is.
True. Very true.
Yeah, I guess that I had the same vision after hearing it the first time, not hearing it the whole. Yeah, like, that's pretty much what I would have expected.
In the best way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely the best way.
That's super interesting in the sense though. I don't know, like, oh, go for it.
I'll my bad. And I just wanted to, on the topic of Fly, give a shout out to Evan Kessler again, who did, basically we had Brandon Haley, who's the sax player on that one, from the band Citrus, which is like one of the best bands in the area, no question about it. Evan took this sax part that we had already recorded and just like flipped the sample, like a sample of it, and that created like a lot of the textures at the end, and then he laid this, like, you know, the outro piano is Evan Kessler. And it, yeah, I just remember hearing that ending for the first time being all like, I just thought, god damn, like that is a beautiful ending to the song that I already loved a lot. I thought it was going in a great direction.
Yeah, we kind of just cut up outtakes of, because when we recorded Brandon initially, we recorded with not a whole structure for the song, so we just had him kind of come in, and then that kind of bridge section for the last chorus, that was something he improvised. And then I think it was me, Evan, and Tristan that were there, and we were all just kind of decided just do that and then keep on harmonizing over it, and that's how we got that section between those choruses there. But then for that outro, we just chopped up outtakes from that recording session, and then he recorded that piano. It was a neat process.
I think it was Gabe too.
Oh really?
It was Gabe. I remember Evan saying it was him and Gabe that were working on the outro for piano.
Oh, gotcha. So yeah, and just to, so there's no confusion, there's Evan George, drummer of Annihilate, and then there's Evan Kessler, who did all the mixing and vocal recording. There's two Evans in the same room, it can get very confusing. But we basically took this album as far as we could at the time, and then went to him who had like the knowledge to just make it sound very polished, and record us at like a very high quality that we weren't able to achieve at the time. So that dude, that guy is a legend. He is just as important as any of us in the creation of this album.
Oh yeah, wouldn't have sounded anything anywhere close to how good it is without
With
hard work.
And one more quick comment on Evan. I literally I hadn't met him. I knew that the other fellows here had gone to his studio, Senate Records at the time, and met him and whatnot. And I was sort of late to the game in meeting him. And I remember the first session I did with him, and we did some vocal recordings for this album. Right then and there, I was like, dude, I need you to record the vocals for the Furs album that Jason and I were working on. I was like, this, it was just such a smooth vocal recording process because we were doing everything for that other album. And I was like, this dude's going to speed up the process by a long shot and also just make, you know, the vocals. And he also mixed that project, mixed and mastered it as well. And yeah, awesome dude. Great.
Did a great job.
Producer. Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
I guess that's just like the kind of dynamic aspects to it where, you know, where did all your guys' paths originally cross? I know you guys mentioned school. Like, when did even like Evan, the other Evan, we'll have that. That's his title now for this episode. Right. The other Evan, the other Evan. Like, when did you guys all kind of like meet and decide that like, yeah, this is what we do? Because I do know that like, I don't want to spoil it for our listeners, but I know the backstory about at least Hayden. So.
This is quite the story to get into. So, yeah. So four of us, we grew up in Silver Firs. Hayden grew up in
Vancouver, Washington.
Deep.
Bit far away. Lived in Michigan for a while.
That's where I was born.
Yeah, I guess you tell your backstory.
I was born in northern Michigan. I moved out to Vancouver when I was like 8, so I've lived in Washington most of my life.
Got you.
But I was living in Bellingham with a buddy of mine from community college, and I responded to a Craigslist ad that I think Evan put out. And we met up just to do a little jam session. And I think it was you, me, and Jason, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, were you there, Tristan?
I had to go to work. I met you when you got there, I think, and then I had to leave.
Because you guys were recording that first album,
which
your dad had already recorded on.
Yeah.
And then the second time we met, we were playing that open jam, whatever that was called, which is where I met Ariel for the first time.
Well, we met at practice before the jam. But
but that was the same day.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is Ariel. He's also going to be playing with us tonight. I'm like, hey, let's go. And I think that's about it. And then we played that open mic or open jam, that open thing. Yeah. We played two of our originals and the cover. No.
Yeah, we played
two and two. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
We played a few songs. And then since then, we had just been meeting up. And then that eventually led to me moving up here. And now I get to see Jason every day.
it's just
wonderful.
We took a Craigslist ad, which we had never posted before. I've never posted anything on Craigslist. Yeah,
I still
we found the first person that replied is Hayden, and then now he's roommates with Jason and another one of our friends. He's an integral part of the band. We just got along so well. It's like, I remember telling my parents, like, yeah, we met this guy on Craigslist, he's gonna be the bass player. They're like, that's not gonna work.
That's not gonna work out.
And here we are.
I think most people would have agreed with that.
Yeah.
No, that's
I think it was just a shot in the dark. I don't think we were like looking for anything. Like, obviously, we were hoping for something like Hayden, but I mean, the fact that it came from Craigslist was kind of an anomaly. But that we're trying to get sponsored by Craigslist now.
Yeah, can we get a Craigslist sponsorship?
Push for the tour. Push for
Craigslist,
the tour.
Right?
It works.
Craigslist tour. But yeah, so Hayden, like I still can't believe that worked out the way it did. But all the rest of us, we're all the exact same age. We went to the same middle school. No, us three.
Oh,
okay. Middle school, high school. So we kind of grew up around each other, known each other since we were young kids. I met Tristan in like second grade. I met Jason when he beat me in Little League. Ariel is a couple years younger than us, but we've always known him as well because he's all his friends were older, so we all like it worked out that way. And and then Hayden popped in from Vancouver, Washington, and now we have the A team assembled here. So it's kind of interesting how things worked out. I don't really reflect on that often, but it's kind of crazy how things came together.
I've told the story a million times. I won't get into it in detail because there's so much other documentation of it. But yeah, I still to this day, like I still think back and I'm like, damn, they really asked me to join this band. And it still blows my mind because I was like, you know, 3 years younger than them, and I looked up to all of these dudes throughout middle school and high school because I knew all of their younger sisters, and was just, well, no, not like that, but
we all just happened to have younger sisters.
Quite the line to throw in there, like, yeah, you know.
No, we just happened to date all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew all of them, and I knew that they were all musicians, and yeah, like the other dudes in the Furs are only one grade above me, so there's still two uh-huh. grades below them. So these were just always the big cool kid musicians that we all looked up to, and so now we all get to work together, and it's extremely dope. And it's like, you know, a little dream come true for me and my childhood.
Oh, that's awesome. And see, that's an interesting chemistry to jump into, especially when you think about like Hayden and the divine timing of how he just kind of got pulled in the mix. So before we close, I'm just curious, is there anything you guys want to pitch that we didn't get a chance to really promote or push yet?
Well, I think honestly, this probably acts as one of the best promotions for our album ever that we could even ask for. Thank you, first of all, because your questions were so detailed and thought out. And I could tell, obviously, that you've heard the songs, you know them by name.
Yeah.
We really appreciate that. And giving us a platform to like really, really talk in depth. We've never experienced anything like this before. So it's been super refreshing and great to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise, guys. And I think that's the thing, though, is like people want to know what's going on in the creative minds that are making this dope music. And that's something that I feel like we really don't get a chance to tap into enough, but we can nowadays, just with how, especially with how the nature, like, again, we're not even this, you guys are in the same space, I ain't in the same space, you know, but being able to connect with technology and actually like put it to purpose.
No, it's true. Yeah, this interview has allowed us to do a lot of reflection on something that is kind of old to us but new to all of our fans. It's weird, right? But yeah, we have Start Acting Strange out now on all platforms. We have two music videos released on our YouTube channel for Arcade and Start Acting Strange. And yeah, we're really just focusing on pushing the album. We have a couple shows coming up, and eventually when the time is right, we'll start unleashing this new era of Annihilate post Start Acting Strange. Might have to go to the woods first. we're very excited for it, and once again, thank you very much.
I love it. And with that, I'm gonna have you guys hold on tight for the after show, but roll the outro.
That concludes this episode of Creatives Chat. Thank you for watching. Join us every Thursday at 3:33 p.m. Pacific Daily Time as creative minds get together and chat about who knows what. View more episodes on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks again to our sponsors for making this show possible. Thank you, We Are Historically, for your conscious human apparel. Shop online at wearehistorically.com.
Hi, I'm Darius Wilrich. I'll teach you everything you need to know about playing jazz piano like a pro with my 12-week online video course and downloadable guidebook, Jazz Piano Pro Essentials. Enroll today at jazzpianopro.com.
Thank you for joining us. Have a happy always.
In terms of the lyrics, that's a lot of words per song.
I think about it all the time.
How do you store that?
It's like standalone. It's its own kind of piece of art. Especially for songs like Toit and Merlot. But it goes for all of them. But yeah, they're just kind of separate works of art that are molded to this more auditory work of art.
Like, this is fire. Like, I don't think people understand, like, you listen to each track and you get something new every time. And again, like, there's so much more to listen for. I think that's the thing that you gain from these experiences, where it's just like, okay, shit, well, now I know everyone in the band at this point, where I'm like, okay, let's listen for them, you know. And that's like its own thing right there. That's its own trip.
And subscribe to be notified of future episodes.
Yeah,
100%, right?